Blog Talk Radio.
Don Show. My name is Don Allen. Welcome. And over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how are you doing on this chilly, cold tundra night?
It is something on the tundra, Don. Did you know it was warmer today in Fairbanks, Alaska than it is here in the Twin Cities in the state of Minnesota, and was actually warmer about 173 miles north of the Arctic Circle. I guess we got all the cold. That is fabulous. I mean, you know, normally it's always kind of warm in Anchorage, as an example, but Fairbanks, which is right there in the heart of Big Alaska, normally keeps low temperatures, but they were higher and warmer than the Twin Cities. So get ready tomorrow, same thing, wind chills around 20, 25, you know, even possibly 30, 35 below up further up north, if you will. So a lot of folks talking. A lot of cars aren't starting, if you will, and you know, unless you're big money, you know, underground parking, the heated garage, and etc. You know, that buggy gets awful stiff out there. You know what I'm saying, Don?
I found underground parking today for $1 an hour, and I was very happy.
How rare is that, right? Wow, yes. Wow, that is something, because I had a friend of mine tell me they made a mistake. They went to a meeting at City Hall yesterday, last night, parked for an hour and a half, made a mistake parking across in the federal building. It cost them $24
for
an hour and a half parking. Yeah, 24 bucks.
Oh, no.
Yeah, inflation is here. I understand you have some observations that we were going to be joined by two guests. They're not with us yet. Is that right?
Yeah. We're waiting on them to call us. But yes, Mr.
Okay.
Edwards.
Well, you've been posting some things about, you know, and they'll have to, you know, to contact you and get in. You've been posting some things, Mayor Betsy Hodges, indicating there's some disparity here in our beloved Shangri-La.
Oh, yeah, she did an interview on NPR, and I have the post up online on the IBNN News, and just kind of went into some rhetoric behind this story, Mr. Edwards, that was in the Atlantic online, at theatlantic.com. It's called The Miracle of Minneapolis. No other place mixes affordability, opportunity, and so well. What's its secret? The author, Derek Thompson, you could tell, first of all, did not know a lot about the Twin Cities, but compared it to a wonderful economic Shangri-La for just everyone, and that the front runners and the, you know, the General Mills, the Pillsbury, Myron Orfield, director of the Institute on Metropolitan Opportunity, and just said, I mean, the place is just beautiful. It has 19. It says it has 19 Fortune 500 companies, but the reality is, no one did a fact check. There's only 17 Fortune 500 companies here in the state of Minnesota. But I'm just kind of fanning through this, Mr. Edwards, because, you know, the Washington Post kept it real. The Washington Post fired back, and caller standby, our guests are holding, so just stand by here. Washington Post fired back, if Minneapolis is so great, why is it so bad for African Americans? With a picture of Mark Dayton sitting in a chair with a guitar player and a banjo player, a couple of white guys, and it was just the Grammy Award-winning Okie Doke Brothers with some little black kids sitting in the governor's, looks like in state capitol, on the floor, listening to the Okie Doke Brothers.
And sitting at the feet of Master. Oh,
yeah,
my God, how things don't change. Lord have mercy.
Yeah.
Dangle.
Yeah, for real. 12 years. 12 years. But yeah, it was very interesting that the Washington Post picked up on this, because they looked at the disparities in the black community. They broke it down, Mr. Edwards, as far as showing poverty and race in Minnesota, and listed of the spots with the high concentration, put maps up there and everything, high concentrations of black, Hispanic, Asian, Pacific Islanders, and that things aren't really going as well as, you know, the mayor and others, the Atlantic and others would have the outside general public believe at this point.
Okay, now those groups that you named there, that's interesting, because our guests who are holding will be speaking to some of that, won't they? They'll be speaking to how those groups view themselves firsthand. And the scheme of things, if you will, the affluence of Minnesota nice, if you will, as some say, Minnesota white.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we certainly want to follow this. By the way, the Washington Post is the same newspaper that called a tech on state of Minnesota in a study last year, if you remember, where they were talking about how great things were, and the Washington Post pointed out we're at the bottom as it pertains to African-Americans in income, education. We're at the top in incarceration
mm-hmm.
and housing and et cetera. That things are not glossy and shiny for the African-American here in Minnesota. It was the same Washington Post. So for whatever reason, they kind of keeping an eye on what's happening out here in liberal Minnesota, man, you know. But, hey, we've been talking about it on the Don and Ron Show for quite some time and writing about it and et cetera. And, you know, all I can do is address my own history. It goes back 50 years. Oops. But anyways, we wouldn't be invited to be a part of Black History here in Minnesota because you're not supposed to talk about that. But anyway, Don, we got a couple guests. Let's rock them in, man. I know they have some observations. They were reflected on by the powerful Commissioner of State Human Rights a couple Sundays ago. He didn't have a lot of good things to say about the Council on Black Minnesotans. Is that who we got holding for us?
Yes. We have the chairman of the board of the council, three times elected chairman of the board of the Council on Black Minnesota, Mr. Patwin Lawrence. Patwin, how you doing, sir? Hello? You're live on the air. Okay, he must be on the other line, Mr. Edwards, because he is there.
As soon as he touched back with you again, we just cut in. What about the executive director? I thought he was also supposed to be joining Mr. Lawrence.
Yeah, he is, and he has not called in yet. Patwin, are you there? Okay, I will just put them on hold. Mr. Edwards, let me get these guys seated, and if you want to go on, I'm going to just do a little chat with them and get them in order here real quick.
Yeah, okay. All right, go ahead.
Patwin Lawrence.
Order for the Star Tribune.
Patwin, are you there? Hello? Hold on. Don't hang up. It might be me. Hello?
Separate, you know, welcome to the club, if you will. But, Mr. Allen, are you there, Don? Oh, okay. Well, Mr. Allen is not there, so I'll just kind of continue on. So anyway, there's been a lot of discussion about the situation and what is happening, and it is kind of odd to see the dispute that is going on amongst Somali leadership here. They were at the White House. United States and across the country, I guess, according to the advance press release that was sent out by the White House a number of weeks ago. Minnesota delegation being led by the U.S. Attorney for the Federal District of Minnesota, Andy Luger. It'll be interesting to see how this riff can be patched up. Again, trying to see my colleague, Mr. Allen. Do we have our guest, Mr. Allen? I'm hearing nothing from my colleague or et cetera. I probably need some kind of text message to indicate that we're still on the air, if you will, because I'm not sure I understand what is going on right now, what is happening. But continue on with the Somali situation, the Muslim issue, surveillance, intelligence gathering, and et cetera. There was a story in the local major paper, the Star Tribune, a couple weeks ago that allegedly the FBI in 2009 had rejected a memoranda and a directive from the FBI's central headquarters in Washington to begin surveillance. I just question the accurateness of that story and Paul McEnroe, the reporter, because FBI field offices do not, quote-unquote, resist or buck the power of, quote-unquote, the national directive, if you will. If the FBI central gives a directive, indicates what it is that they expect to have happen, that's what happens, pure and simple, end of discussion. And so we are being led, or were being led, to believe that that some way or another the local FBI was not involved in intelligence gathering here in the Twin Cities, if you will. We'll have to see that and follow that a little bit more quicker. Again,
okay,
we're gonna. Don. Yeah. Do we have our guest or what's going on with that? We were expecting them. We're going to be talking in terms of what the council is doing. Are they with us? Is Mr. Lawrence with us?
They are regrouping and will call back on a different phone. They're having some trouble from the location where they're at. And
that's too bad. Well, let's give our audience kind of an update because you had, we had been promoting this for the last week that these two state officials were going to be joining us to respond. There's no sense in us, being tiptoeing around. This is an outgrowth of a serious rift within the Dayton administration between the Commissioner of Human Rights and the Council on Black Minnesotans. Why don't you kind of bring us up to speed, Don, on what's happened and what we were expecting the two state officials to clarify?
Well, for over 20 years, when the former executive director was leading the Council of Black Minnesotans, Mr. Edwards, they, as you know,
Lester Collins. Mr. Lester Collins. Go ahead.
They never submitted any legislation, anything to the revisor's office to make a bill on behalf of the African Heritage community of Minnesota. So now you have, these two aggressive people, Ed McDonald, executive director, and Pat Lynn Lawrence, chairman of the board, who have decided that they're going to move forward and they see what's going on. And they've looked at some very interesting stuff as far as the city of St. Paul and the city of Minneapolis, and they're hiring, and also the state of Minnesota, the Met Council, MnDOT, and the Minnesota Department of Administration. And they looked at this and said, okay, they want the council to kind of be quiet and sit back, when in fact that all these people, all these other state agencies and state and city agencies have fell below the marks as far as what they were supposed to do in equity and hiring for people of color, not just African Americans, but all people. And it's a seriously damning kind of report that they put out, and with some research that really looked at these things really hard. So what you have here is you have a systematic group of senators who want to be the go-to people to the governor, and they really don't want to have anything to do with the Council in Black Minnesota. At this point, they want to disband all the councils. And
okay, what senators are we talking about? Are we talking about the two senators representing the African-American communities from
yes.
one north, one south? Is that who we're
yes.
talking about, or are there other senators involved, or what?
That's who we're talking about. And there might be other senators involved. I'm not aware of it at this time, but those are the two main ones, Senator Champion and Senator Hayden. So when you look at the full picture, you know, I mean, we're sitting there, you know, Senator Hayden is supporting the Asian Council's agenda, but will not push the Council on Black Minnesota's agenda, which sends up some smoke signals that people should be really aware of at this point. So it's not looking good as far as that goes.
Well, a couple Sundays ago, which got us to this particular point, and you indicated that this program has extended for quite some time a invitation mm-hmm. To our Kevin Lindsay, the powerful commissioner of human rights for the state of Minnesota. I think you indicated Wednesday before last, maybe 5-6 times, he basically indicated that his schedule would not allow him to be on the air, so we're certainly on at prime time, 8:30 Central Standard Time, and so he's continued to decline an opportunity. Now, he was on the local urban contemporary station a couple of Sundays ago, and he really just kind of had a ball, bouncing the ball off the heads of the Council on Black Minnesotans, indicating that they were inadequate, if you will, you know, ineffective, if you will, admitted that he had been going around the state talking in terms of the need to sunset, if you will, the ethnic councils and et cetera. Now, we have had Mr. Lawrence on this program a couple of times. First time was about a year and a half ago. He was good enough to join us and talk a little bit about what was going on, and then he was just on a couple months ago. So he certainly saw the importance, if you will, of dialogue about what he was doing. Now, he did indicate there were some problems with these two senators, and there were problems with some criticisms, if you will, of the council. But I didn't see them raised to the level that I heard Commissioner Lindsay, who talked quite glowingly about the great job he was doing with employment, particularly on the Viking Stadium, which nobody wants to talk about anymore.
Uh-huh.
And he was talking about his 32%, et cetera. Now, 2 Wednesdays ago tonight, you unveiled numbers that were provided to us, which indicated a tremendous participation by ours of a protected class, if you will. I think it was something like 280,000 hours. Am I correct, Mr. Allen?
Yes,
you should have the information on your computer as I'm looking over. And 280,000 hours as of, you know, the end of January or the end of December, whenever it was. When Kevin Lindsay was on the air on an urban radio program a couple of Sundays ago, he never offered any numbers, and he was never asked about any numbers. Of course, we've seen that happen with some of the other leaders that have been on the air that have done that, if you will. Also, we had been told by Louis King, the powerful community leader and head of OIC, about a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, that he was going to encourage Alex Tittle to come on this program and talk about the numbers. You remember that?
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah, and apparently we were kind of told in a roundabout way by certain sources that Mr. Tittle had been told that it would not be in his best interest, job-wise, to come on this program and be, quote-unquote, examined or quizzed by the Don and Ron crew, if you will. But at the same time, I'm concerned because we're getting, you know, though it's, you know, 25 below zero wind chill out there right now, we're getting ready for the annual look what we leaders are getting ready to do for the African-American community, you know, significant jobs and new projects and et cetera, better educational undertakings and et cetera, Lucy Laney as an example, is being identified as a school that is going to be a quote-unquote pyramid, if you will, of success and closing the gap and all these things. So this is kind of like an annual rite of passage, right?
Mm-hmm.
But nobody really comes up with the figures, except those figures that were provided to us two Wednesdays ago this evening, which mean that a significant dollar amount has been poured into the communities of color, and I assume the African-American community. I would assume that certainly at least half of the 280,000 hours are African-American, you know, in other words, maybe even 100,000 hours and et cetera at an average of $20 an hour or better. Boy, that's an infusion into our you know, community, but we can't find anything on paper. So we were hoping that the council's representative would be able to help us, you know, give us some kind of insight on how well these things are going. By the way, there is a special legislative committee chaired by a member of the House, member of the Senate. Member of the Senate is State Senator Bobby Joe Champion. It is the Oversight Committee for the Viking Stadium, and on this program a year ago, on this program again, and as Mr. Allen oftentimes reminds folks, that you can recapture this program on demand. All you have to do is go back, take a look, and punch it in, is that we asked the question about the numbers of the data and et cetera, and you know, folks were saying they were prepared to produce the numbers. We had a $750,000 gift to a group of 15 organizations headed by Mr. King that was going to begin another one of those training programs. We have to be the most overtrained group of people in Minnesota to be so underemployed. But what the heck? Obviously, somebody's getting the training money. So I was kind of hoping tonight that those are things that we could talk with the Council on Black Minnesota's leadership about, because, you know, somebody maybe needs to explain to the masses of people just what is really going on. Because, I mean, clearly there was an attack by the commissioner of the Human Rights Department against the Council on Black Minnesotans. And, you know, we just need, don't you think so, Don? We just kind of need to know the falling out. Now, I know that see over there in the studio, my colleague is getting a lot of text messages.
People want
us to raise the questions to ourselves, if you will, as opposed to picking up the phone. In fact, let's get that phone number, Don. Let's get that
number.
So people are ready after our Council on Black Minnesota Leadership finally join us. Give them that phone number so that they can call in and ask some questions. That's what this is, a Q&A.
Yes, it is. The number is 347-426-3904. Again, the number is 347-426-3904. And the phone lines are wide open. And so, yeah, Mr. Edwards, you know, I'm just kind of, you know, looking at this from the big picture. I see a lot of skullduggery going on, you know, with some of our black politicians, and yet, you know, nothing's getting done. And you got these articles coming out and about Minneapolis, and we don't have any leadership, basically, to answer that, to respond to some of these.
Oh, no, Don, I have to disagree now. I have to disagree because we're told on a frequent basis that we have leaders. I mean, they meet, talk amongst themselves, sit around the table, you know, go to each other's homes, primarily in the suburbs, and et cetera. Now, I have to differ with my colleague from the right. I mean, our leaders tell us what great leaders they are and what great things they're doing, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, we're just trying to get a feel, because I'm just trying to understand what initiated this rift between the commissioner of the Human Rights Department and the Council on Black Minnesotans, because when Mr. Lawrence was on with us a couple months ago, I mean, he was very diplomatic, if you will, very civil in his reflections and et cetera. He, you know, he didn't really blast. But that was not an in-kind response from the powerful commissioner of the State Human Rights Department. He was pretty specific and emphatic that the council, the racial councils, if you will, ethnic councils, racial councils, really, had outlived their usefulness. It was time for them to move on and to come under his umbrella, right? Remember how we heard that early on, maybe 5 or 6 or 7 months ago, that it was time for them, these racial councils, to come under the tutelage and control of the state human rights department. And it looks like, I don't know, is there some sense of support for that in the legislature? I mean, what's your take on that while we wait on our friends to get back to us?
Yeah, I don't think there's a lot of support for that, you know, because they're not just talking about one council. They're talking about all of the Asian Pacific, the Hispanic Latino, the Council on Black Minnesotans, and so there's
Native American?
Native American, yeah, and there's not a lot of support for that. And so it looks now that, it looks to me, Mr. Edwards, that Lindsay has kind of backed himself into a hole. And doesn't, you know, and is going to do some manipulative stuff to try to circumvent the good work that these councils are doing on behalf of the groups that they represent. And I'm not just talking about the Council on Black Minnesotans, and I'm talking about all the councils. And so it's a dice game, you know, crapshoot, I should say, right now. And I'm actually looking for the document that I emailed some people at the James Noble, the legislative state auditor.
Yeah, legislative auditor. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of those folks, because I wanted to know exactly how the $50,000 was allotted to Kevin Lindsay, Commissioner Lindsay, to go around the state.
Now you say 30 or 50,000.
$50,000.
Yeah, at one point you were saying, we had been saying it was $50,000, and he confirmed that, $50,000, yeah, that he was given to do a quote-unquote carnival show around the state. Go ahead.
Yeah, and so I sent a request for information, which I have not heard a peep from anybody out of just yet. And hopefully they'll get back and they can explain that, because right now they really can't explain
Don, that. You know, you're running into static again. Your voice is breaking up on my headsets, and I think that's what's going out over the air. But, you know, again, the phone lines are open. Any questions of the Don and Ron about this riff between two powerful entities, if you will, that basically are significantly staffed by African Americans, and then that is the African American or the Black Council on one hand, and of course the State Human Rights Department, which deals with all things allegedly dealing with human rights issues faced by citizens in the state of Minnesota, if you will. Mr. Allen and I have been talking in terms of Pacific Project, up the up to $1.3 billion, a little almost $1.4 billion, Viking Stadium, if you will, which is allegedly halfway through completion, should be done by July of 2016. In fact, going to have a Super Bowl game there in 2018. You know what I mean? So it's going to be a happy day here in Minnesota for all citizens, I assume. But then the Washington Post today, in a response to an article on a website called Atlantic, questioned the authenticity and the accurateness of statistical data put out by, is the individual you first identified, is he a blogger or is he a writer for Atlantic? Is this Atlantic magazine or is it Atlantic website?
It's the Atlantic magazine. Magazine.
Yes. A very sophisticated, mundane kind of publication for the more enlightened members of our society, as I best remember the Atlantic. Washington Post raises some serious questions about the accurateness, if you will, raise questions about even some of the reflections by Mayor Betsy Hodges. My colleague, Mr. Allen, has been all day today on his websites and et cetera, raising questions about just how much people really understand what's happening here, if you will. By the way, Don, it's now 9 o'clock. Have our guests been able to reconnect, or what is the situation? Are they going to be able to join us? Because this is somewhat uncomfortable and embarrassing for our audience that it was anticipating a spirited conversation with the representatives of the council.
Yeah, I have. I'm looking at the switchboard, Mr. Edwards. I see no calls coming in. I've texted a couple of times. I hope that we didn't scare them off. Because I did speak with both of them today.
Uh-huh.
And they said that they would be calling in, you know, with the bells and whistles on. And we were going to get down to the bottom of everything. And so, yeah, we're going to get some rehearsing. We'll see what happens here by the end
okay,
of the show.
Okay, well, what I want to do to maintain, keep us on the local situation, is there is a conference going on in Washington. There was, I think it was a one-day conference, maybe two. President hosting a conference on Muslim issues and really the future of Muslims in America. This comes on the heels of a serious hate crime in North Carolina in which a Caucasian Christian gunned down three Muslims, if you will, a man and his wife, both of them students at University of North Carolina, and a young lady, cousin, I think, of the young lady, the wife of the young man. All of them involved in the dental school and et cetera. Very, very bright young people who just happened to be Muslim. The authorities have gone to great lengths to indicate they don't think it was a hate crime. You know, a guy came into the apartment, had him kneel down and executed him, you know, execution style, shot him in the head. I mean, I know that folks are all pumped up about these beheadings, if you will, Christian, Egyptian Christian Coptics, 21 of them brutally beheaded a couple of days ago. We had an American female hostage, a lot of confusion on that. ISIS indicated that she died at the hands of a Jordanian air attack in response to ISIS burning alive a Jordanian fighter pilot whose aircraft had been downed, if you will.
Uh-huh.
And so there's a significant amount of brutality. It appears that there is no stable government in Libya. Remember how we were all being told as the coalition, if you will, I call them the second version of the Coalition of the Willing, were bombing Libya and then ultimately cornered Muammar Gaddafi and executed him, just killed him outright, that we were told that this was good for the Libyan people, good for Libya, good for North Africa, good for the Muslim world. Now you have a country that is without any kind of governance. You know, outlawism seems to be the order of the day. Egyptian Air Force bombing now inside of Libya, et cetera. So much for all of these plans. Then this takes us back here to the Twin Cities. As we said earlier, big article this morning's paper by a reporter named McEnroe, that there is some real friction between Somalis about the fact that the government is using certain programs to spy on them. Do you have any reflections on that, Don?
I'm looking at this whole world picture, and I'm looking at the people getting very nervous. I'm looking at just here locally, people questioning anybody. I was just at Bobby and Steve's gas station out in Columbia Heights, and a guy walked in that had one of the Middle Eastern turbans. I don't know the proper name for it, Mr. Edwards. And you should have seen the people drop everything they were doing and all eyes on him till he walked out the door. And I'm like, oh my goodness! It was like everyone became frosty, and that's kind of the nature of all this stuff that's going on. What we're seeing overseas, this ISIS, and I looked at the beheading thing, Mr. Edwards, and I don't know. I'm just not really convinced at this point. And no disrespect to anybody about this, but I'm not really convinced that that stuff is really real at this point. And there's a lot of skeptics online that are saying the same thing that I'm in. So I'm saying, so I guess I'm in good company at this point, and we'll see. We'll find out. So,
well, one of the things that's happened in regards to that, Mr. Allen, is that we are continuously told that the Western media, and I assume maybe other media, have actual pictures of these beheadings. It started when Foley and others were individually being beheaded by the individual who allegedly had a British accent, who for a number of weeks CNN and others were saying that the British Prime Minister and MI5 and MI6, the British intelligence network, knew who he was, Jihadi John, I think they called him. But now we hear that there were pictures of the beheading of the 21, if you will, and yet the American public, we the American public, are never shown that. You know, some folks say it's too gory and et cetera. Well, they show us everything else when they want to. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I'm kind of like you. I'm not just quite sure who really is really running the ship, or in this case, running the insane asylum, if you will. How much of this information, and by the way, and we as journalists have not touched on it, in light of the Brian Williams fiasco at NBC.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure that the mainstream media really has that kind of credibility. And so, you know, you make an interesting point. Like we said again, phone lines are certainly open for observations. It'll be interesting to see if people are staying on top of their games, if you will. And locally, right here in our own city, we now see a split within the Somali Muslim community. Some Somalis are saying that the government is just some good guys who are just trying to protect and keep everybody safe. I think it's been the number, the so-called official number that they give us is about 15 young Somalis have gone overseas, and we know that about 3 or 4 of them were killed in combat last year. We hear from sources inside of the Somali community here in the Twin Cities, also from Seattle and Columbus, Ohio, where there's large Somali communities, that the number is even greater than that coming out of the United States, if you will. And so, you know, we, the sons and daughters of the African, are basically kept right in the dark, if you will. But, you know, we certainly understand as African Americans these, you know, these special operational programs that you know, spy and prey upon your community. In fact, there's also an article today in the paper, very interesting, which talks in terms of a controversy about confidential informants.
Mm.
God knows we got a lot of those in the black community. Oops. So I'm just trying to get a feel, you know, on just how serious this riff is, particularly in that the riff and the leadership chose to expose it yesterday, which is interesting because you kind of wonder if the people that were expressing how irate they were really irate because they weren't invited to the conference. Ooh. Go back to the website of the Star Tribune about 2 weeks ago are the names of the individuals who were selected by
Mr. Edwards. We have the chairman of the board of the council.
Oh, Biden. Okay. We got Mr. Lawrence. Okay. Well, why don't you go ahead and introduce him and get into the discussion, Don?
Okay, yeah. We have Bob Mayer with us, the chairman of the Council on Black Men, chairman of the board 3 times, Mr. Patwin Lawrence. Patwin, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
We're doing great. I know we're having a little technical problem here. I'm glad you got that all wrapped up. We have not heard from Mr. McDonald yet, but we hopefully will hear from him sometime between now and the end of the show. But what we were talking about earlier was just kind of, you know, we heard listened to you on a local urban radio station a couple Sundays ago, and then last Sunday we listened to Commissioner Kevin Lindsay kind of put his foot in all the ethnic councils, but as far as talking about disbanding them, put them under his watch. And I know that you guys have filed some legislation that, well, it was turned into the revisor's office that was actually turned into some type of legislation, and you kind of put your own agenda together, and this is unheard of for the council. Can you just tell us a little bit about that before we go into the kind of back and forth here of the guts of what's really happening?
Okay. Yeah, well, it would be great also to know a little bit about what Commissioner Lindsay said. Was he also on Al Flowers' show that
you're
referring to?
Yeah.
Okay.
He was on the Sunday before last, I should have run this down to you, but it just wasn't, you know, endearing, for the lack of a better politically correct word.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that was interesting because Al Flowers said that he was going to have me back on with Commissioner Lindsay. Al said that I kind of caught him off guard with when he interviewed me, and he said that you know, he wanted to have me on with Commissioner Lindsay. So that's why I was kind of surprised to find out that, you know, this has occurred. But nevertheless, that's interesting because Commissioner Lindsay, to get into the kind of the legislation that the council is promoting, has was given $50,000 by the state legislature, which that needs to be, you know, kind of looked into. But nevertheless, he was given $50,000 to go around the state and to, you know, ask the different communities, are the councils of color working? What do you know about them? What do you think should be done, you know, in terms of their effectiveness, and are they relevant? And so I went to the one that he had in Minneapolis, not Minneapolis, in St. Paul. And, you know, he talked a little bit about the Human Rights Department and what all the department is doing and kind of what he's doing. And then he got into the different councils of color, kind of their statutory mandates, and also what other states that have similar type of council models. Kind of, he said that legislators are looking at how to make these the councils here in Minnesota more effective. And so by doing that, they're looking at the models in other states, kind of how they're structured. In other states, they report to the governor, or they might report to a director of minority affairs, who then reports to the governor. And so they're looking at different structures of how to structure the councils. Well, what's unique about Minnesota, which we are part of a chain of other councils that are, you know, in other states, and they're really envious of the model that we have here, because in Minnesota, the councils of color are really independent. We are part of the executive branch. We don't report to the legislature. Yes, the legislature created us, but we're part of the executive branch. And we have an independence that a lot of the other councils in other states envy. Because if you have to report to the governor directly or report to somebody that reports to the governor, that makes it more of a political office. So whether the governor is a Democrat or Republican, sometimes, you know, agendas can shift and change. Whereas when you're independent, you have more freedom to let your voice be heard and to let voices that are kind of stifled by that political process be heard. So that's one of the good things about this state. And so when Commissioner Lindsay has gone around the state, really nobody showed up at his meetings. The times that he did have people in the audience, they were people that the Council on Black Minnesotans, because we are looking to branch out statewide instead of just being here in the Twin Cities. We do have one outstate office, which is in Rochester, who is being staffed by Colin Nimley, who's doing a fantastic job down in Rochester. And we're looking to open up in St. Cloud and in Duluth and in Mankato. And that's so important for the Council of Black Minnesotans, because we want to have a statewide presence, because it's a statewide organization. That's something that we've heard feedback from the governor's office, even in terms of our appointments. We want to make sure we have people that are not only appointed around the state, but if we can open up and be around the state, that way we can have that statewide presence. We can have more interaction with communities around the state, and that just makes us more of an effective organization instead of community members waiting to come to the Twin Cities for a board meeting, or come all the way to the Twin Cities to meet with the executive director, board members. We have somebody on the ground that can work with the communities, work with legislators from those particular areas, and just make the organization more effective in terms of meeting the needs of the community. And okay. So the council, we have gone out, we branched out around the state, we've set up committees in these different areas where we don't have an office, and we've been talking to community members starting back 2-3 years ago when we did our legacy listening tour, and we've been taking community feedback about what's the issues that are impacting their lives, and we have taken that feedback and created a legislative agenda. And Anyone can go to our website. On our first page has our legislative proposals. We have proposals around urban agriculture, around education, around human rights. We reach out about six different areas. And what's key that we're looking at doing, also what's human rights is important, because we've been advising the governor's office that there's been no net increase to the Department of Human Rights. So for Commissioner Lindsey, we've been a big champion of his organization, wanting to ensure that he has funding to be able to effectively do his job, because he really can only carry out four of the 19 mandates that he has. He's not really funded to carry out all 19. And it's interesting that the governor...
Pat, let me stop you right there. That's a very interesting point that we have to kind of dig into, because I know Mr. Edwards knows a lot about this. For years, I don't know, I can't count them, but the Department of Human Rights has really only been able, like you said, to carry out four of its 19 mandates, which means they're out of sync or out of compliance with what they're supposed to do, which creates backlogs and things like that. Of that nature.
Yeah.
So human rights are not getting addressed in the state. So with
that said,
you have the Minnesota Office of Administration that is not really monitoring the hiring or enforcing the affirmative action or the statutes on the books that were there before the people that are in office there got there, you know, now, but... And so you have this big circle of the Council on Black Minnesotans is trying to address that with these groups, and there seems to be a little pushback, you know, a lot of pushback, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wanted to catch you on that. But we have a caller, and I want to get him in real quick while we have you on the air.
Okay.
Caller, go ahead. You're live on the air.
Yes. Oh, well, thank you. You know, I just had from a community perspective, I just had a question on the Council of Minnesota Black, what's the appropriate name, Council on Black Minnesotans?
So, yes. That's what our name is, yes.
Okay. But the question, if you could just kind of in a nutshell, what is it that you do? I mean, what is it that, the average African-American or citizen in the, can say, well, this is what the council is doing for me or my neighborhood or my community. You know, I see all these proposals, I see these things, but I mean, it's like you're put in a position where you have to go through all kinds of steps to do something, and then by the time you can actually do something, I mean, the problem has, I don't know, exacerbated. I mean, this is just from the outside looking in.
So if you take a look at our proposals, our very first one in there, and that's a very good question that the caller proposed. If you take a look at our legislative packet, our first bill that we have in there is our expansion of our council duties. The Council of Black Minnesotans was created back in 1980, and our main function is to advise the governor, legislature, and state agencies on issues that impact the African heritage community. And so that's really our key focus, is to be advisory to those offices, or to those branches, I should say, of the government. Then we also serve as a conduit or a liaison between them and the African heritage community. And so one of the things that we can do is we can bring legislative proposals, which is really telling the legislature, well, these are the issues that are going on in the community, and here are solutions. Here are a way to resolve the issues that are impacting the African heritage community. So we've sent in our council expansion to expand our enabling legislation, which hasn't been changed since 1980, updated for, the 21st century. We sent a proposal for human rights, cultural arts, jobs and economic development, housing, education, urban development. If you look at that bill, the expansion of the council, it will show you what our current enabling legislation is and our duties, not only to be an advisory organization. We can also propose solutions, which our legislation does that, but we also can go and meet with different organizations and advise them on, issues that are impacting the African heritage community. We're also to look at out-of-home placement, which we have a program with Department of Human Services, where we're actually doing a fantastic job of getting a lot of families of African heritage to adopt children, and that's very much needed. That's actually in our enabling legislation, one of the duties that we have to carry out. We're also to promote, highlight successes of the African heritage community, which we do when we have our large annual event that we have each year. This past year we did an economic development summit. The year before that we did a cultural relations summit. So those are all the different types of things you can see in our current enabling legislation that we are mandated to do. And I just want to say that the council is compliant with all of those duties or mandates in our enabling legislation.
Extremely impressive. They really do. But, you know, if I had just kind of a basic, you know, question, is you've been in existence, as you said, since 1980.
Yes.
You know, and I mean, I continue to hear, you know, the disparities. I mean, the conditions for the African American in the Twin Cities and in Minnesota really seems to be at the bottom of the 50 United States.
Absolutely.
And so I guess I would just like to ask, since 1980, I mean, what do you think you have really accomplished? I mean, it's one thing to say we want this, we want legislation. I mean, we want to, I mean, I've seen all of these things in the paper about child protection and the governor putting together a committee because of the ineffectiveness of what they
children in the area. Sorry to interrupt you, but let me do this because we have a time situation here.
Okay.
Because, the conversation is starting to move in the direction that it should, particularly in light of the criticisms by Commissioner Lindsay, because I have a series of questions predicated upon, you know, basically almost 50 years of experience dealing with this and being present when, first of all, the State Department of Human Rights was founded back in the 60s and then the council. Mr. Allen, we need to give ourselves another full half hour. Are you able to text and make sure that that carries us to 10 o'clock?
Yeah, already did it.
Yeah.
Already did it.
Oh, all right. Then, gentlemen, go ahead with your conversation then, because I have a series of questions I have to get through.
Okay. Well, that's actually a very good question that the caller proposed. And that's one of the things with the council currently, me and one other board member, we're the senior-most members on the council. We were appointed back in May of 2011. So all current board members are from 2011 moving forward. We're all been appointed by Governor Dayton. We also, our current executive director, Edward McDonald, he was hired by the council back in the summer of 2012. So as you can see, just over the past 3 years, the shift in what the council has been doing. I can't really speak to what happened before 2011. I know that, you know, the council wasn't doing what it should have been doing. And, you know, that's unfortunate, and I don't want to disparage the previous executive director, Lester Collins, and other board members who, you know, were working with the council because they had a different environment. They were under Republican governors, and so that situation was a little bit different than what the council is operating under now. But we have a good relationship now with the governor, who's appointing good board members to the council, which is key, because before, you know, certain people were being appointed and they were on the council really just to create havoc. So we've gotten that clean up. We have a fantastic executive director, and we're really focused on the work of what the council should be doing. And so that's what you've been seeing over the past couple of years, is the council functioning as it should be. Are we perfect? No, but we're working in that direction. And you can see the difference with the proposals that we're presenting, that we're getting out into the community, we're engaging, we're having educational sessions where we're teaching the community how to interact with the state legislature. Over the past 2 years, when we sent our proposals to the legislature, we had several sessions where community members came in. They gave us our ideas. We put those into the legal form that you see in those proposals. And then we're also having caucuses. We're having them on Thursdays, where we're going, we're getting community members who want to learn how to engage the legislators so that we can get legislators to be sponsors of our bills, our co-sponsors and signers. And we're teaching the community how to engage. And I'm going to tell you something here. Commissioner Lindsay, when I was at the St. Paul meeting that he held, said that some legislators think that legislators think that that's dangerous for community members to, not community members, but I should say the councils of color to be doing work like that, that they feel that it's dangerous. And I think this is where the council now, we're getting a lot of pushback from not only our legislators of color, but from some people within the legislature that feel that we shouldn't be doing this kind of work. And that's really unfortunate. I think really trying to stifle the voice of the community. Because
well, no,
ideas
I agree. And, you know, I did want to say, too, I don't want you to think that I'm being disparaging or anything.
Oh, no, not at all.
I fully recognize the monumental tasks you have. I mean,
mm-hmm.
there's the processes to make things change.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you look at going to the legislature, well, you know, the people of color mm-hmm. on the legislature are
mm-hmm.
a minuscule number. So
yes.
what you have kind of a whole, when you're talking about the legislature, state of Minnesota, you have 81
mm-hmm.
counties in Minnesota, and
yeah.
probably 77 of these counties don't have a person of color within
but
their boundaries.
But to speak to that, we are, the council, we are working with legislators regardless of party, because we're a nonpartisan organization, but we understand the dynamics in the, you know, African Heritage community in terms of voting and on all of that, and that's something that I think needs to change, but that's a whole different subject. But we are working with Democrats, we're working with Republicans, we're working with people across the state, because we have African Heritage people all across the state, and a lot of those white legislators, I'm going to tell you, they've been very supportive of the work that we're doing. They've gotten us meetings. The executive director and I, we met with the Republican caucus last month and presented our proposals. We have signers on our sponsors, as well as co-sponsors and other signers on our bills who are Republican, people from the outstate. And that's why we want to also be in the outstate, so we can have those relationships in those different communities with those legislators. And that's really key, and especially when we have these caucuses and we're bringing community members to teach them how to engage. That's been really helpful, because a lot of them are from those communities. People have brought busloads down from Duluth or from Rochester and St. Cloud to our caucuses so that community members can learn how to engage. And a lot of them have contacts with the legislators in that area, and that's so key. When you go and you sit down and you talk with them, they sometimes have a personal relationship, from whether it was from work or from doing community work in that area, that is so key, because then they see, oh, well, you know, these people know about the council. Let me take a look at it. These are constituency, and they want me to support something that's, you know, helpful for the community, and it helps to make them look good as well, and it only helps because, I'm going to tell you, there's kind of a shift in the politics somewhat within the state, where a lot of the African immigrants, they're not supporting the Democrats. They support Republicans, and so a lot of Republicans know that this is beneficial to them if they are supporting the work of the councils of color, and we see a lot of that happening, and that's, I think, a really, really key point that needs to be brought out.
All right.
Okay,
all right.
Caller, you have any more questions?
No, I don't. Thanks a lot.
All right, thank you. Okay. Chairman Lawrence, we have another half hour, and you've certainly... For the last 15 minutes, kind of been laying it out. Particularly, I thought the last caller asked you some excellent questions with regards to actual function, et cetera. I have a couple of specific questions, because you kind of set a timeline, an interesting timeline, indicating that, you know, you really haven't been able to do what you need to do, but beginning in 2012,
mm-hmm.
new blood, if you will, a new infusion of vision and et cetera came on to the council. And I
mm-hmm.
well remember about a year and a half ago we had you on the program for the first time, and we talked
mm-hmm.
about the things that were a part of the future of the
yes.
Of the state, its populations of color and et cetera. And I don't know if you remember, but one of the things was we talked in terms of the construction that was to begin with
mm-hmm.
regards to the Viking Stadium. And I know that you listened to the program with Commissioner Lindsay on the Urban Contemporary Station two Sundays ago. So let me do it like this. During the course of his interview on that station, he got into a reflection and a series of statements about the 32% policy that is in play.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he incorporated that policy throughout all of state government, which was interesting. And in fact, he made some mention of that some of the 32% had been that the number had been encouraged for county units of government with a presence of populations of color. And, you know, it sounded great. And he went on to talk in terms of the 32% on the stadium. Now, that brings us to an interesting situation, which takes us right from 2012 right up to now. The legislature created for itself a oversight committee for the implementation of the legislation pertaining to the stadium. And they created a joint House and Senate panel chaired by a House member and chaired by a Senate member. And,
mm-hmm.
of course, the Senate member is State Senator Bobby Joe Champion. Now, on
mm-hmm.
the program two Sundays ago, Mr. Lindsey, or Commissioner Lindsey, continued to talk in terms of the 32%, but he was never asked the question of what the actual number was, both in hours, which he had, you know, which he changed from personnel to hours about 8-9 months ago. A lot of money was provided by the oversight committee for the stadium. The board made available $750,000 to a group of 15 organizations to train people and et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm listening to all this, but I never hear any figures. And then, lo and behold, two Wednesdays ago, we received some kind of mysterious message, according to my colleague, Mr. Allen, which indicated something like 700,000 hours, 750,000 was the rounded figure, has been worked on the stadium. And about 280,000 of that has been for the protected class, quote-unquote, people of color. Yet we've never seen that information. So let me ask the question this way. Given what you've been saying to us for the last 15, 16 minutes, and given
mm-hmm.
what has, you know, been discussed on previous programs, has the commissioner's office, number one, has the oversight committee, number two, for the stadium under Hagman, have they made available the numbers to the council on black Minnesotans?
Mm-hmm.
Are those numbers made available? Have you seen those numbers? Can you attest and certify that the numbers are what is now being stated at about 280,000 hours for persons of color? Have you, and has Senator Champion provided the Council on Black Minnesotans with a copy of those numbers since the inception of his committee, which he co-chairs, that actually commenced, quote-unquote, in February of 2014? Have you seen any numbers? Can you discuss with us any numbers as it pertains to that $1.3 billion project?
Unfortunately, I cannot. That would be actually a great question for Edward McDonald, our executive director, because he may have given those numbers to Edward and have communicated that. I know Edward just had a meeting with Senator Champion a couple of days ago, and so, you know, information like that may have been provided. So
Yeah. Like I said, you've been laying it out and waxing and et cetera,
mm-hmm.
and I can appreciate that. The special oversight committee that is
mm-hmm.
the under the total absolute control of the legislature, both houses,
mm-hmm.
if you will,
yep.
was created in January 2014. They started providing figures and et cetera as early as February 2014. Now, are we to be led to believe that Mr. McDonald, yourself, the board specifically,
mm-hmm.
have
mm-hmm.
not seen any numbers that we can discuss tonight?
The board has not. That's why I'm saying that would be a good question for Edward, because they may have given that information to Edward. But as far as I'm aware, we have not seen any numbers.
Are you troubled by that, particularly in light of the questions being raised by the two African American state senators about your own mission and effectiveness, and yet are you not troubled by the fact that they have not, as is required by the legislation, I'm looking at the legislation right here, that your entity, the Council on Black Minnesotans, that particularly given the deplorable number of black folks that are not working in the construction industry, and given the statements by Commissioner Lindsay, if you will, on that program two Sundays ago, in which he talked about the wonderful job that is being done, the full inclusion and et cetera, and the absolute implementation of the 32% figure, are you saying to us that 32% goal, be it for any aspect of the state, and let me move to another item, which I would assume that you've been looking at within that context. He also talked in terms of the 32% as being a part of state procurement. Do you get any information? Do you get any reports as it pertains to the state's procurement program?
Yes, we do. And actually,
does it show 32%?
I can't speak to if it shows that particular number. Again,
well,
that would
be
very good.
Well, I have to ask you, Chairman Lawrence.
Okay.
Why can't you? Because at the point that it reaches you, it is a clinical breakdown, and it is supposedly a certification and authentication of the numbers that have become allegedly public information. Have the numbers been published by the Council on Black Minnesotans or by the commissioner?
I don't want to say no, that we have not seen it, because it hasn't been published. I can just tell you that the council ourselves, we have not seen that figure. So that's why I can't speak directly to it. I don't want to say no, he hasn't done his job in that respect, because he may have provided that to Edward. And I want to say one of the things in our proposal with the department on the Department of Human Rights, we also wanted to look at auditing, making sure that the state agencies are, in terms of their work, it's being audited to ensure
Chairman Lawrence, I understand, because we're at give and take here now, and we're coming down to the last 22 minutes. You're talking about auditing. My associate, Mr. Allen, early on in this program, before you were able to come on, talked in terms of some discussions with the legislative auditor, James Noble, where the issue of auditing and et cetera came up. Now, let me just kind of go back. The special legislative committee created by the legislature to oversee all final dispositions as it pertains to the $1.3 billion People's Stadium was to include data and information that, in fact, would be certified and is certifiable. It's been a year now, and are we to be led to believe, and I have to, you know, concur with the last caller that we had, are we to be made to believe that there is no empirical data that can support any of this conversation, which then begins to be rhetoric?
Well, there probably is data that is out there, but it may not be favorable or what we would want to see.
You're speaking for the council, or are you speaking for us universally as black people that should be upset that we've been fed and given less than a half a loaf?
Hey, Mr. Edwards. Mr. Edwards.
No, you're right.
Mr. Lawrence, Mr. Edwards, I don't want to interrupt you, but I have to, because I just got an email. The email is the PowerPoint presentation from Human Rights Commissioner Kevin Lindsay. Presented on the 29th, I think, of January this year, regarding his Minnesota State Ethnic Council's overview and discussion. And Mr. Edwards, you asked an important number about a question about numbers. I just went through every slide on this report. There is not one damn number from the commissioner's office on anything. The meetings he went to, the number of people that showed up, the towns he went in, there's no qualitative or quantitative information on here. It's an editorial, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, if this guy's not giving out numbers to nobody, I mean, I don't know if you guys be getting numbers either. I mean, if they can get away with this smokescreen dog and pony show,
mm-hmm.
then this PowerPoint is idiot.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen that PowerPoint, and it really doesn't discuss any numbers, and I don't think that's really was his purpose. He gave an overview of kind of what the Human Rights Department does, his work, and all of that, but really gave no concrete numbers. Really what he's been focusing on is either reshaping the councils of color into, you know, under his department, which I think would be a terrible thing because then that would make us more of a political body. And so people think that, you know, the council hadn't done anything in the past. I don't think anything would really happen with the councils in terms of working for their community if we were to go under the Department of Human Rights and then be a part of that political structure, because that person is appointed by the governor, whether the governor is Republican or Democrat, and that would just not bode well for our voices from the community bubbling up to the legislature. So
let me just do this so that folks just don't think that we are, because we have our own research apparatus and et cetera. And, of course, this is prior to the 2012 date that you kind of set in place with regards
mm-hmm.
to the council. But
mm-hmm.
I call all of our attentions to a article, an editorial in the Minneapolis Star Tribune dated
mm-hmm.
June 18th, 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, the headline, you may want to check it, Chairman Lawrence.
Okay.
The headline, the lead editorial, the only editorial, is that this is one list we'd rather not top. And it is... It is a part
mm-hmm.
of what my colleague, Mr. Allen, just said about 40 minutes ago. And it is entitled, a document that talks about the underemployment divide. And
mm-hmm.
it has the atrocious figures of African-American, white, and the difference in racial, if you will. I would suggest it may be something you may want to take a look at. The only other city...
Mm-hmm.
that surpassed us was Detroit at 20.9, Negro, Black unemployment, Minneapolis, St.
Mm-hmm.
Paul at 20.4. White,
mm-hmm.
even in Detroit, white folks at 13.8, underemployed, unemployed, et cetera. Here in Minnesota was 6.6. Now, the reason I'm saying that is that when these editorials and this data, some of which Mr. Allen came from research by the Washington Post and other, there was this scramble, and we had black
mm-hmm.
leaders and et cetera. And then, we had a tornado here in the Twin Cities,
mm-hmm.
and people really began to talk about how black folk were going to be put back to work, you know, pulling back and upgrading North Minneapolis, and all kinds of organizations came out of that. I have to tell you that I'm absolutely disheartened
mm-hmm.
to hear no response with respect to any definitive figures that would indicate what the health, quote-unquote, of the African-American community is, when,
mm-hmm.
in fact, I listened to the commissioner on a radio program, directed towards the African-American
mm-hmm.
community, and he gave out these numbers, if you will. He made it appear that on every project in existence, and particularly the stadium, which has a significant governance board, if you
mm-hmm.
will, and so I just assume that what's basically happening is it's just kind of a game, right? And
yep.
is there any hope for the African-American community to ever be able to get even close to the table? If so,
yes.
how will that be accomplished?
Yes, I would say that there is hope. I'm probably an internal optimist. But yes,
mm-hmm.
there is. But there just has to be a change in strategy in the way that we do things. I think with supporting just one political party, you know, as people of African heritage in the state for the most part, I think that's part of the problem. I think that we need to branch out and work more with the Republicans as well. And that means going there to the legislature, letting your voice be heard, going to hearings. Like I said, the council, we've started this weekly caucus where we're having a teleconference as well for people across the state to call in, and legislators will be there on the line as well to hear about what's going on in the legislature each week, what hearings are coming up, and then to get people to come and to testify, and then also to have people to come and engage with their elected representatives. So that's one part that that we are doing in terms of the council to get our voices heard, and then also submitting our proposals.
Well, let me ask you this question, Chairman Lawrence. I mm-hmm. understand what you're saying to me. Been around a long time. Is the council prepared to ask Senator Bobby Joe Champion and his opposite number on the special oversight committee for this? Mm-hmm. For the Viking Stadium, are you prepared to ask him to share the actual numbers on the workforce as well as the procurement that has taken place? Are you prepared to ask him that, and how will you do it, and when will that take place?
Yes. Well, what you should do is you should make sure that you...
No, not me. I'm not going to do anything.
I'm saying
you as a person in a position of authority. Let's be serious, okay?
No, I'm serious.
I just show up at the state capitol. I'm just another black man, old black man, coming in, raising questions. You, sir, are a designated facilitator and leader for the proposition. Let's be real with each other. So are you prepared to do that? Is the council prepared to do that? Is Mr. McDonald prepared to do that? Are you prepared to ask Senator Bobby Joe Champion to provide factual, certified documentation and numbers with respect to the workforce and the attainment or the achievement of the 32% goal on the Viking Stadium?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we are definitely doing that. That's something
are you prepared
direct,
to do that before the
do that?
Before the 1st of April? Let's just set a date so we can invite you back. Are you prepared to do that before the 1st of April?
Yes, I don't see why that would not be feasible for the council to do. That's something that we definitely can do. If the community wants to know those numbers, and I want to know them to see if
I could hear a white legislator saying something. Why would the community not want to know?
Why would they not want to know? Because they
might
not.
Why would they
like
not want to? I mean, you said if the community wants to know. Why would the community not want to know?
Well, they might not like the numbers that they find out, but that's how we know where we are. And make sure that our legislators, particularly our legislators of color, are being held accountable, because they're not being held accountable. And that's the other part where I was answering your question about, is there hope? One, we need to change our voting demographics. If people that we're voting for aren't doing what they say they're going to be doing, and they only come around when it's time to vote for them and then we don't hear from them, or if they're trying to stifle our voices and saying, well, we don't need your proposals. We have ideas of how your community should be organized, and that's kind of going on with the councils, where we even have a Hispanic legislator, Senator Torres Ray, trying to tell the councils of color what they need to do. She doesn't speak for the African heritage community, and so, you know, that's part of the issue. We need to hold them accountable, and that lies on the community. If they aren't doing what they say they're going to be doing, and if they aren't being honest with the numbers, if they aren't being forthcoming, and if we find that it's going on, then they need to be voted out. That's just quite simple. There are other people in the community who would be good to be legislators. We need to find new people, where we have them to vote, prep them, get them ready for the next election that's coming up, and vote these people out that aren't doing the work that they should be doing. And I think that's what needs to happen, because we keep electing these people. They're saying they speak for the community, that they're trying to do the best for their community, and things are getting worse and worse under their watch. If it's not working, then something needs to change. And I think the community has to do that themselves. We need to push them out. We need to hold them accountable. We say, well, where are the numbers? What are the numbers? What's going on? What are you doing to really make a change and difference in our community? And if they are just hemming and hawing and not coming up with facts and figures, if they aren't doing the work that they need to be doing, we need to vote them out.
Question, Mr. Allen, then I'll turn it over to you. We've been talking also about Sports Facility Authority. I just stayed away from it to see if you would touch on them. Are you also prepared, though you have no statutory relationship, and of course the legislature made sure who had statutory relationship and authority, but as a part of your mandate and what you talked in terms of what you're going to be doing, and in that the Sports Facility Authority is really under the auspices and control of the Minnesota legislature, are you prepared to ask the Minnesota Sports Facility Authority if they are prepared to share the numbers with you so that you may share those numbers publicly in a public meeting? Are you prepared
to
do that?
Yes, we can definitely do that, because that's part of our role as a council is advising not only, you know, the governor, legislature, and state agencies, but we serve as that conduit between them and the African Heritage community, and that's something that the community wants to know or needs to know, then they need to come out with those figures.
Are you prepared, sir, my final question, to make that move to contact the chairwoman of the Sports Facility Authority and ask for a mutual cooperation prior to April 1st?
I don't see any problem with that. And the only caveat that I have with that is that's something that, you know, the executive director, he's not on, you know, on the show right now. And then I would have to bring this to the board. But I personally, you know, as the chair, would want us to get those facts and figures for the public.
Okay, let me just say
so
that
we
sir.
Can know that. So, yes.
Because, like I said, obviously there's no gamesmanship going on here. We thought Mr. McDonald had agreed to be on. So in that he didn't make it, that means the responsibility lays on your shoulders.
Yeah, that's fine. I can.
Okay, all right. Thank you, Mr. Lawrence. Mr. Allen, I turn you back to Mr. Lawrence as we begin to wrap.
Yeah, and I just want to say something, Mr. Edwards, on the employment numbers. I was able to sit down with a mathematics professor, and he just emailed me this. I sent him the update for the stadium that I was emailed from the Minnesota Sports Facility Authority, and he actually tore this bad boy up. And, quote, there's no way that you can perform 734,000 hours of work with 280,000 by minorities, 69,000 by women, 35,000 by veterans, and have 32% minority goal, our goal, and have 38% current minority hours work, women goal hours 6%, and women and women work hours 9%. And he wrote, Don, I quote, Don, it doesn't even equal 100%.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And I have to say to you, Chairman Lawrence, I made that prediction, unfortunately, you know, for what is happening to our community in a series of columns in my column in the Spokesman Recorder a year and a half ago. I said this is what was going to happen. We were going to get the shaft. People were going to lie to us. People were not going to be able to provide or certify. And I use that word again, sir, so that you understand. To be able to certify and authenticate. Yep. Because I'd like to see you ask the legislative auditor, James Noble, to help guide and provide counseling, if you will, to the Council on Black Minnesotans, just based on what Mr. Allen has just heard from a quote-unquote well-schooled, if you will, and well-trained mathematician.
No, and that's good that the work that you guys are doing, that you're holding our community leaders accountable, and that, you know, if they say that they're going to be providing this information and they're not, we need to know what that information is, because that will also help the council, help us to then be able to advise and to, you know, look into this. This is part of our role of what we're supposed to be doing as a council, so I'm more than happy to, you know, get that ball rolling. For the community.
All right. Let me give you one other piece in your conversations with Ms. Helm. Asked her to allow you to review the Minnesota Sports Facilities Authority's 2013 legislative report dated January 15, 2013. I think you'll find it very interesting.
Okay.
And that was 2 years ago. All right. Mr. Allen, go ahead on. But we appreciate Mr. Lawrence taking the time to hook up with us.
Yeah, we appreciate you giving us a call, and we'll track down Mr. McDonald tomorrow or the next day and figure out what's going on, and probably have him on exclusive next week if we can. And I'm also going to make a call into Alex Tittle, Mr. Edwards, down and see if we can just finagle him on and see what we can do with that. But anyway, I appreciate you calling. Thanks for your time, and we'll talk to you real soon for an update here, okay?
All right, that sounds good.
All right, take care, Chairman Lawrence. All right, all right.
So, Mr. Edwards, I just wanted to tell you that I went to the mailbox yesterday, and I have three memberships cards from the NAACP in three separate envelopes.
Oh, that was for what, for your wife and children or what?
No, my wife ain't thinking about being a part of that mess. But anyway, no, and the children definitely ain't going to be a part
of that. Not all three of them for you.
Yeah, all three of them got Don Allen.
Oh, you
Don
got
Allen,
three separate membership cards. No, I was being serious. I thought that you had probably bought for the family, had bought the family package. All three of the membership cards are addressed to you. Do they have the same registration number?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Oh, okay.
The same number. Same number, yep. And the branch 4050. And, I mean, I haven't heard anything from the NAACP except, you know, the president of the NAACP, Minneapolis branch NAACP, using the acronym like a jock strap, keeping it close and tight. So,
okay.
And I haven't heard any, you know, I mean, shoot, you know, what can you say? I guess, you know, if you have a title and you want to be a part of a social cabal and not do anything, it's okay. That's why the numbers look like they look for Black Minnesotans. Okay?
Well, absolutely. 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 You know, we damn sure. Now, we want to be clear and transparent because of our friends in Cincinnati, Duluth, Benton Harbor, Michigan, Atlanta, Philadelphia, and et cetera. We have talked to NAACP presidents, board members, and et cetera. We just haven't been able to find any of them here other than our friends and associates in Duluth who are still waging a titanic battle to take back control from a Idi Amin version called Claudie Washington, president for life.
Yeah, I just heard, and you know, I did post this, Mr. Edwards. I couldn't believe I took a picture of the cards and posted them online. And you know, I got like maybe 15, 20 comments, people saying that the husband and wife each got two, someone got four, the other one got six, and you know, they're talking about 49 cents a stamp. And, you know, and marketing says if it happens to you, it's happened to 250 more people and 250 more for each of them. So you're talking, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in postage wasted by this organization.
And you're also talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars in ghost money that based on the number of cards issued and yet based on the amount of revenue that came in, no wonder the NAACP is under constant audit because you can't do anything but fall short. You know,
yeah.
If I send you three memberships worth, $50 a piece at $150, and yet it only shows a $50 payment, I mean, there's $100 unaccounted for. And if you know you do that with 9 or 10 or 12 or 13,000 membership, you know, failures, wow, you get behind the deficiency or the deficit pretty quick.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we're running at a couple minutes here left of the show.
Okay, let's roll it on out. It's been a good program.
Like, thank everybody for calling, and we'll be back next week.
Yeah, all right. Take care. James Brown, take us home.